Why is our society so risk-averse when evidence suggests we are safer and healthier than ever before? Pleased to have in our studio Ottawa citizen, award-winning journalist Dan Gardner, going to be discussing how we form judgments about risk and how health fear merchants as well play on your fears. Dan Gardner is, as I said, a journalist at the Ottawa Citizen. He was recently an editorial writer at the Ottawa Citizen, policy advisor in the 90s to the Minister of Education in Ontario, and social policy advisor to the Premier of Ontario in 1995 and 96. I'd like to welcome him to the studio. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me, Barry.
When we've talked about this issue a lot in the past, and you're writing a book on risk and risk in a global context, not just health, but also social policy, justice, risk to our children. Do we allow our children to go walk to school? That kind of thing. And where how our society has changed its perception. That is, we're afraid to let our kids go out without looking at them all the time. We think there's a disease around every corner. We hear of someone dying from bird flu halfway around the world, and it becomes sort of a national policy to create to try and prevent bird flu. Why the book now? What is it that hasn't been written to date that has helped people try and discern how risk, how they determine risk, how the psychology behind risk, and how it intermingles with their lives?
Well, it's an interesting, the background on this is this. If you look at the statistics as I have, you know that we are, as you mentioned, healthier and safer than ever before in human history, by a long shot. In fact, we are lucky, we are blessed to be alive today. Well, that's not how people are reacting. In fact, sociologists talk about our societies, modern societies, as risk societies. We are really, really risk-averse and apparently becoming more so. And now I had never, I didn't know much about the subject about risk because we don't talk about risk. Mm-hmm. We talk about particular risks. We talk about crime. We talk about health. We talk about terrorism. But we don't talk about this overarching subject. But I was writing about various subjects such as crime, for instance. And in the course of my work, I met a psychologist, Paul Slovak, who's a pioneer of this field of risk perception studies. And I discovered that, in fact, over the last three decades, roughly, particularly the last 20 years, there has been a huge amount of research done into risk perception, the psychology of risk perception. Why do we worry about some things, but we don't worry about others? Why do we worry about some things that are, the statistics tell us, are extremely rare, like child abduction, terrorism, that sort of thing, but we don't worry about things that the statistics tell us are a whole lot less rare. Diabetes is my favorite example. Diabetes affects a heck of a lot of people, but all the risk perception research indicates that people really aren't intimidated by it. Why is that? And this field of risk research, perception research in psychology, as I say, it's fascinating stuff. If I can very quickly summarize it, basically what it's come down to is this. Psychology, modern psychology has developed basically a two-mind model of how we think. This won't be a surprise to anybody because this model actually goes back to the ancient Greeks. In fact, it sounds just like what the ancient Greeks talked about. There is reason and there is emotion. Our one mind is conscious. It's slow. It's deliberate. That's the mind that thinks about statistics, mm-hmm. and it comes to conscious decisions. The other mind is the unconscious mind. The unconscious mind, the greatest feature about it is it's quick. It gives you a snap judgment instantaneously. And when you get a snap judgment, you feel it as an intuition, a hunch, a feeling. You don't know where it came from. You don't know why you feel that way. You just do. And what the psychology of risk perception is all about is trying to figure out how these two minds are communicating. And basically what they've concluded is, most of our judgments, in fact, this goes to the larger field of psychology, most of our judgments are actually products of the unconscious mind. They are, they are products of that intuitive, emotion-based, snap judgment-based mind. And what happens is our conscious mind has the capacity to intervene. The judgment is made by the unconscious mind, and the conscious mind intervenes and says, hey, hang on a second, that doesn't look right to me, and it can adjust. The problem is it very often doesn't intervene and it doesn't adjust because, as I say, it's slow and it takes a lot of effort to do that. And sometimes the unconscious mind and the conscious mind contradict each other, but we go with the unconscious mind anyway, and that's when we get things wrong.
Is that the preservation mechanism? Is that where living in previous eras where the perception was that there were real dangers, physical dangers
Absolutely.
Out there, and so you had to respond very quickly, otherwise you would die if you didn't take care of yourself.
That's
is that
exactly
where
it.
That comes from?
Oh, that's exactly it. It is, in evolutionary terms, the unconscious mind is the ancestor. It's primal. It's the ancient one. The conscious mind is a very new phenomenon, relatively speaking. The unconscious mind, let me give you an example of how
Sure.
it works. If you were to ask yourself, for example, am I at risk of being killed? You know, if I walk through this park at night, am I at risk of being attacked and killed? What will happen is your mind, your unconscious mind, will immediately try to think of examples of that happening. And if it can think of those examples easily, which is to say quickly,
mm-hmm.
it will give you the intuitive sense, yeah, that is likely. There's danger. Stay away from there. Now, that's a good mechanism, right? Because if you're living in a hunter-gatherer society on the plains of Africa, and you just saw your cousin get dragged off into the long grass by a lion,
right.
that gets stuck in your memory. And then you remember, yeah, I remember that. I guess there is a considerable risk of being dragged off into the long grass by a lion. So that's a really useful mechanism. But it can go wrong in the modern world for the simple reason that we see things that don't actually happen. They don't come from our personal experience. You turn on the television news and you see one murder after another. Now, those murders might be occurring in different cities, different countries, different continents. They may have nothing to do with your experience whatsoever. But you see them, you remember them, and your unconscious mind will use them in the same way that it would use that example of the lion dragging you off into the grass to determine that, yeah, there's serious risk here. So that thing worked in the environment for which it was created, which is these ancient hunter-gatherer societies. But in the modern world, it can sometimes go haywire.
What I'd like to do is I'd like to apply that in the next segment and talk about specific real examples and how the media uses that as well. As you mentioned, there's been the reporting of murders and child abductions. Makes headlines everywhere across the one child in one city, and it becomes news everywhere. Definitely plays a role on how people think about how they protect their children. So when we get back with Dan Gardner, we're going to talk about more about your risk and also calls at 1-800-580-2372. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin, and you're listening to Sunday House Call.